This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
I'm sick with this, I'm sick with this. Since you went to the bottom, I just missed. My own sweet time, didn't teach what I found. I didn't recognize simple things anymore. I don't want to be defeated, I don't want to be defeated. I don't want to be defeated.
Oh, hey, my sinners. What is up? Welcome back to my podcast, a special birthday edition of my podcast, Lead Singer Syndrome, a podcast where I, your host, Shane Told, speaks to other lead singers about what it's like to be the front man or front woman of a band. And yes, today is my birthday. I'm not going to tell you how old I am. It's Googleable. I don't like saying the number. Big shout out to all the people that have gotten me presents, all the sinners, people in the group, fans in general. It is awesome. If you want to get me a little belated birthday present, I don't mind. I'm into this. I have a little Amazon wish list up if you want to check it out. It can be found at leadsingersyndrome.com/wishlist. But it's funny, you know, I bring up my age and, you know, you get older, you know, everybody can relate to this because everybody has a birthday every year and you kind of look back on the past year, you know, and I think you always sort of look at that past year and you're like, man, what was I thinking? And I think at some point you feel like, okay, that's not going to happen to me anymore. I'm just going to be an adult and I'm going to be smart. But for me, not really. I still feel like I'm 20. I don't feel like I'm in my, I don't even want to say it. But I did get a birthday card that said right on it, was from Christina Fickett, actually. Shout out to Christina, straight out of Dallas, Texas. And it said, happy 30 blanks birthday. And I was like, oh, the number. Seeing it on the page just really kind of freaked me out. But hey, I'm not 40 yet. That's going to be a scary one. But thank you, everybody, for the birthday love, the birthday wishes. It's awesome. So let's get to this week's episode. I speak to a guy that you guys might not be super familiar with, not in a huge band, not a place that's selling out House of Blues across America or anything, but I think one day they might. They're a very talented band, and this singer is incredible. And since I did this podcast, I've been listening to them nonstop. They are called Dayseeker. The guest is Rory Rodriguez. This guy has a hell of a voice. We talk about that. We talk about how prolific he is with all these different songs and projects, and it really is a great conversation to really get in what it's like to be a working musician in this scene. Before we get into that, as always, I want you to know you can get in touch with me anytime. It's really, really easy. There are so many ways to do it. Email leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. We've got Twitter. We've got Instagram. We've got a new reworked Facebook page. Definitely go like that if you don't already. It's all pretty easy to find with a little search magic. And if you're not so happy, please feel free to call the hate line. It is 1-657-666-HATE, H-A-T-E. And you can leave me a message and you can tell me how much I suck, what a horrible job I'm doing. Maybe you weren't that happy with my conversation with Rory of Dayseeker. I don't know. Give me a call. Leave me the hate. I love the hate. And again, once in a while, I do roll out a clip or two. So you may be on this show inadvertently. So give me a call, 657-666-HATE. Also, if you want to support the show, we have the All Access Club. We're just about to hit 250 members. It is awesome. It's a great community, great people, so much fun. And of course, there's a lot of perks. You get bonus episodes, you get a question and answer session with me, I do on the Facebook group, access to the Facebook group, which is just an incredible place to share thoughts, ideas, music, sports, jokes, memes, whatever you want, it's awesome. And also, if you join the second highest tier, which is $9 a month, you get stuff sent to your house, merchandise, and all this stuff every 3 months. And we've been doing it for just over a year now, and it is so much fun. And again, shout out to all my sinners. If you're interested in joining, it's as little as $6 a month. It really does help the show keep going and keep growing week after week. Here's the link, leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. Check it out. I want to give a big shout out to the sponsor of the show, rockabilia.com, the best place on the internet to get merch. Seriously, don't even bother going anywhere else. All the stuff they have is awesome. It's all officially licensed from the bands. There's no counterfeit bootleg stuff like you sometimes find on eBay or Amazon. Actually, you find it a lot, especially on Amazon. You got to be really, really careful. Amazon's one of those things you think is legit, but you're not always buying it from Amazon. You're buying from a third party. I've been burned before. At rockabilia.com, that's not going to happen. They have over 500,000 unique items. You're not going to have the same thing. Everyone's walking around town at the mall, at the show. Everyone's wearing the same shirt. That's not going to happen because they have so many unique things. I was looking up some stuff, and I found a Cannibal Corpse hockey jersey. So if you can think of it, they probably have it. So head over to rockabilia.com. That's rockabilia.com right now and pick up something real nice. But here's the best part. If you use my promo code, you're going to save 15% off your entire order right now. Easy. Use PCLSS. Fire that in the promo code box. 15% off your entire order. Again, PCLSS at rockabilia.com. The best merch store on the internet. Right now, I am on tour with my band Silverstein. We are with Tonight Alive, Broadside, and Picturesque. It's a fantastic tour. We're kind of getting down to the last couple weeks. But if you do live on the East Coast of America, or Chicago or Detroit, some of those Midwestern cities as well, we will be there very soon. Check it out. I really am happy with the show that Silverstein's put together on this tour. And now we're a little over halfway through the tour, and it's going so awesome. So I don't want you to miss it. So check out tickets for that. It's at thegetfreetour.com. All right, let's jump in to my conversation with an incredible singer, incredible frontman, Mr. Rory Rodriguez of Dayseeker. What's up, man?
Hey, what's up, dude?
Dude, I'm having a nice little Wednesday afternoon, just hanging, you know.
Yeah, man. Are you? I actually, you're from Canada, right? But I don't know where you actually live.
Yeah, I live in Toronto.
Oh, nice.
So I'm sure you've been here a couple times.
One time, actually.
Only once. Tell me about your Toronto experience.
Oh man, that was kind of a funny time because, I don't want to rat anybody out specifically. One of the guys in our band, he got a DUI, but it was only because he was actually 20 at the time. And, if you have any amount of alcohol in your breath, I don't know how it works in Canada, but if you have any amount of alcohol in your breath and you're under 21, you immediately get a DUI. So
oh, yeah. Bummer.
Yeah, he had a few drinks. I mean, he waited a while to drive, and I think he got pulled down the street from his house, and he had like 0.01 or 0.02 on his breath. And so he got a DUI. And so we kind of got worried because, yeah, we got confirmed for a Silent Planet headliner that passed through Canada, and we heard they're pretty crazy about letting anybody into the country who had a DUI. So he had to get a temporary resident permit or something, and we had to file for it, and we did all that, but they were still pretty crazy at the border about letting him get through, and they were asking us stuff like, well, what would you guys do if he just couldn't play with you or if we didn't let him through? They were like really,
wow,
like really kind of intense about it. But Other than that, the show was good. It was cold.
yeah, what else is new?
Yeah, we got some free Chipotle, which was nice, as the touring bands do. And I didn't know how they would react to that stuff in Canada.
I've never gotten free Chipotle. This is not, like, I've heard about this, but I've never actually got it. I've gotten like the free illegal Pete's burritos in Denver.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That place is pretty cool. But I've never got free Chipotle. I know Garrett's like all about the free Chipotle, the free Chick-fil-A. Like, I know he works his magic.
Yeah, they were actually the ones who like kind of gave us the heads up initially, because it kind of sounded too good to be true. But if you're in a touring band and you don't know about that, it's a pretty nice hack, and you can usually, you know, if you can split up your meals between just one of those, which, you know, their food portions are massive, you can like eat the whole day, and you don't spend any money on food. So it's, yeah, we do it a lot actually on tours. Our drummer Mike is like really, I don't know if it's his voice or whatever, because I've tried calling and they're usually like, no, fuck off. But whenever Mike calls, for some reason, they're really all about it, and they usually help us out. So it's awesome for touring.
There's always somebody in the band that does that, like, adult things, and it's always random. I remember the first time we ever played a show outside of like of our area, and this is like 2001, and we like had to call the promoter, and we like didn't know, like, we were all kind of like little kids, and we were scared, and we were lost, and we're like, let's have Josh call, he's the cool one. So, you know, we put him on the phone, and every time we crossed the border, I always drove across the border and talked to like the border guy. That was like my job. Or when we go to the airport, I'm the one that checks us in with the baggage, you know, like it's like, I don't know why, but there's always like one person in the band. It's not necessarily like the band leader either. It's just like, for some reason, there's someone in that has that right character to handle that, you know?
Yeah, I feel you. It's funny too. I do a lot of, I guess, the dad or the adult stuff in the band, but that's why I tried the Chipotle thing. But it's like, man, I've gotten rejected a lot of times, and I feel like my spiel is like, it's really not too far off from what Mike does, but for whatever reason, he just maybe has a kinder sounding voice or something, but he gets it like, I mean, sometimes he has to call like five or six in a row, but he always seems to get it for us. But I know what you mean. There's
five or six different Chipotles?
Yeah, he'll literally find like, he'll find like five, like multiple Chipotles. We'll get to a venue and we'll load in, and then he'll call. Sometimes we'll get it on the first one. So yeah, sometimes he has to call like five or six, and we'll drive like, you know, like 20 or 25 minutes to go get food. But it's like, but I mean, then it's nice, yeah, because then if you're on a tour where you're fortunate enough to get some type of buyout, then you just pocket it. So it's almost like you're sort of getting paid to tour. It's a weird concept, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, we used to eat Taco Bell like pretty much like multiple times a day, because Taco Bell's like the closest thing to free, you know, and that was our thing. But like, I mean, Taco Bell's great, because there's quite a bit of variety with the menu. There's not a lot of variety with Chipotle. Like, you must get pretty sick of it.
It gets a little monotonous. I mean, it's good though. Cause I mean, and then I don't know, in a setup where it would be very easy to just eat like total shit for a month, I do feel like my body hates me a little bit less than like the first few times we went out to tour. But it's, yeah, I agree, it can get a little like, damn, I've had like a chicken salad like 6 days in a row so far. but Mike's also kind of funny in that way, because he really doesn't, he's very health conscious, and all he eats when he's home is like ground turkey and vegetables. So he's like, and he doesn't get sick of, like, he can eat the same thing over and over again, and if it tastes good, he really doesn't get sick of it. So,
okay. Well, hey, whatever works.
He's lucky in that regard. Yeah, man.
So you're a Southern California kid. I always wonder, you know, we talk about Toronto. I always wonder what it's like for people that grow up in Southern California, and then they go on tour for the first time, and they're in a van and trailer, which is not a great vehicle to drive anyways, but having to drive that in like the snow in winter when you've never done it before. I always want to ask bands what that's like.
Oh God. Yeah. It's, there's some major culture shock. Definitely. Our first like real tour that wasn't 3 or 4 days was, we did like 3 or 4 weeks with, this band Kingdom of Giants, Death of an Era, and then, a band called Adestria. They were based out of San Diego. And, yeah, man, it actually started in late November, and we were just so excited to tour. We didn't really understand, like, all these areas we were hitting in the U.S. It was, like, literally the worst time to go because of the weather and the conditions. And we had a few drives where it looked like Star Wars, like you were going light speed because the snow's, like, the snow's not, like, falling all pretty and delicately, it's like shooting at your van right. while you're
and if you put on the high beams driving. If you put on the high beams, it's like even crazier.
Yeah. It's just that was the first of many times, but we on that tour too, we hit like black ice and we lost control of our van, and we were lucky we were in like a residential neighborhood, but our van actually got stuck in a ditch, and then our trailer jackknifed, so it dented our trailer in, and then this was in San Antonio or some part of Texas, but somebody was actually really nice. Like we thought we were going to be hours late for check-in, and then some really nice guy just saw us, and he had like a tow hitch attached to his pickup truck, and he just like helped pull us out in like 5 minutes, and then he just left, and it was like definitely that Texas or Southern hospitality, maybe.
No, that's cool.
It's terrifying, man. And we even we recorded with this guy named Josh Schroeder for our last record, and he was really great to work with. But he's based out of like Bay City or Midland in Michigan, and it's
oh wow.
We went to record at like January 3rd until like early February, and it was just like. Again, I love the studio, and Josh was awesome to work with, but the living quarters that you stay in is actually like a 20-minute drive from the studio. So every day it was just like just so sketchy driving because, yeah, and you could literally go over like 10 miles an hour in his neighborhood and you would start just skidding out on the road. And so
right.
I didn't even need to get coffee sometimes because I just had crazy anxiety from almost dying. Every time we drove.
No, I don't even know where Bay City, Michigan is.
It's like where Detroit is. It's basically like two or three hours north, I believe. So it's really close to like the edge of the state.
But wow. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah,
go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, yeah, you're very right. It's, you know, in California, the worst we get is a little bit of rain. And it's, it's still, you still want to be a little bit careful when you drive, but it's a whole other thing, man. It's definitely some major culture shock when you're driving through these freezing parts of the U.S.
Damn, dude. No, that's crazy. And yeah, I could relate to it now. I'm actually like where I am right now talking to you. I'm in Windsor, Ontario, which is like right across the border from Detroit. Like if I look out the window, I can see Detroit. So I'm basically right there, and I'd never heard of Bay City. So, well, dude, this is it's really good to have you on the show, man. I talked to you, I talked to a lot of artists that are more well known, that have done a lot more stuff that have sold, gold records and platinum records. But I always love to talk to some of the more I don't know how to say it, the grinders. The career musicians sure. like yourself that, mm-hmm. you already made a crack about what it's like to get paid to play shows, which is yeah. supposed to be your food money that you get to keep because you get free mm-hmm. Chipotle because Mike calls, mm-hmm. So it's really good to have you. And I like to get that take on things, the take from the grinding in the trenches of what it's like to be a real working musician and not somebody that travels on buses and has everything done for them. So it's really, really good to have you. And one thing, you already talked about your new record. Your new record is awesome. Dreaming is sinking, waking is rising. It's really, it's an emotional ride, I feel. And it's
Thank you, Drew. It's
put together. It's a very high concept record, and it's put together in a way that a lot of records aren't put together anymore. Can you talk to me about that record and what went into planning it, writing it? Because it isn't just like another record where you have to okay, we're gonna write some songs and figure it out later. This is like seems like a lot of thought went into it.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I was really into this band called Boys Night Out.
yeah, I know them very well.
Do you know? Yeah,
They're from the same hometown as Silverstein. Dude. We're from the same exact place. I've known them since I was like 14 years old.
Yeah, that's
oh,
it's
okay.
Really
so Trainwreck, you're going to bring up Trainwreck.
I am going to bring up Trainwreck.
That makes a lot of sense now.
It's a shame too, because like. I feel like, because a few people have asked me the same question, and I feel like I that band and that album, and then people just kind of look at me like, huh? Like, they, like, have no idea what I'm talking about. But, my older sister, she listened to, like, kind of post-hardcore, all that stuff when I was in high school, so she kind of guided me through, like, my early stuff when I started listening to it. I listened to them. A good amount of Silverstein too. I have a funny few stories actually about Silverstein, but we can touch into that.
Oh, I'm ready. I'm ready.
Yeah, with the album, yeah, I heard Trainwreck when I was quite a bit. I know that album is it's got to be over 10 years
old. I think it came out in 2000.
Now,
I think it came out in 2005. I could be wrong, but I think that's the year it came out.
Yeah. But it was you know, and at first it just sounded like a good record. And then I think especially at a younger age, because I had to have been like probably like, I don't know, like 15 or 16. So I just started listening to like real music. And I feel like that was one of the first albums I heard. And then my sister was explaining like the concept that this guy kind of wakes up in the middle of like a dream and like kills his wife. And then, you know, each song is like a chronological story of his like road to recovery. I mean, you think like it seems pretty bad in the beginning, and then you think it's going to be fine. And then, you know, he ends up like taking his own life at the end, but the last track's like really drawn out, and they bring back all these lines from different songs. And I just thought the way it ended was like, I don't know. It was very, like, visually satisfying. Like, I could see a lot of the scenes in my head.
It really paints a picture. Yeah, no, it's an amazing record.
Yeah. And I've wanted to do like a concept for over a decade since I heard that album. But I was always like, it's, you know, for me sometimes it's hard to finish writing a song, you know, even just one song. Like, I'll write half of it and I'm really stoked, and then I'll get 3/4 of the way through and it would feel difficult sometimes. And you know, and that's one time, you know, sometimes it feels like, I can do a whole one and it comes in like an hour and it was really easy. But, so it always seemed kind of daunting to commit to writing like 10 or 11 tracks that are all based around the same story or the same concept. But, I have a guy I know indirectly. He was in a motorcycle accident, actually out here in California. And he's been in a, not necessarily a coma, I would say honestly more of like a vegetative state for a very, very long time, for a few years now. And, I started seeing like stories and articles about people who would wake up, from comas or vegetative states after years and years. And they would say like, I was like fully conscious. I just couldn't say or do anything. And, it was really interesting for me to think about. And so I thought at first I was like, well, that would be really interesting to try and write from the perspective of someone who's in a coma. And then I started thinking of other ideas, you know, along that same sort of storyline. And then before I knew it, I had like, at first I was like, well, maybe I can write like two tracks that are, like, interlapping. And then I was like, oh, like I have like 6 or 7 song ideas and they're all related to the same story. So I felt like at that point I kind of just had to commit and just write the whole thing as a concept. So
it's
basically just about, you know, I had a friend who was a victim of sexual assault. She's very sweet woman. You know, I'm not saying anybody deserves that, but she definitely on the end of any spectrum of a human being, like she's just like the nicest woman on the planet. Like, absolutely. It's, you know, it's terrible that it happened to her, but I always wanted to write about, you know, her experience and how it made me feel towards the person who did that. And then, in turn, I started reading this book called The Coma by this guy, Alex Garland. And so in that story, it's about a guy who falls into a coma, and it's because he's defending this random woman on a train because it seems like she's about to get robbed or possibly sexually assaulted. And they end up beating him into a coma. So I kind of see like a inability for, you know, I wanted to write about my friend's experience. And I thought if I took it like the fictional route, sort of like Trainwreck. I wrote it basically about a guy who's like defending his wife from a guy who had sexually assaulted his wife. And then the guy who did that terrible thing actually ends up beating the main character into a coma. And then so that's in the first track. And then the rest of the album follows as it almost seems like he wakes up immediately and his wife has left him. And then his mother, who he has kind of a poor relationship with, that again kind of ties into real life for myself, like she ends up passing away while he's in the coma, and all these things kind of keep building until like a kind of a big low point in the album. And then there's a track called Carved from Stone where he ends up actually hearing his wife's voice, and then that track is from her perspective, and it's about how she hasn't really left his side since he's been in the coma, and he actually hasn't been awake at all. Like, he's, you know, any of the terrible things that have been happening throughout like most of the album, they've all just been like dreams within his coma. And then so then after he hears his wife's voice, it becomes pretty apparent that now he's conscious, and in the fact and knowing that he's still in his coma, and it's kind of like his struggle to get out of it. And then the last track is kind of apocalyptic in tone, and I wanted that for the listener to be like, you know, if you want to be a pessimist, you could say that it's apocalyptic and final because maybe he's about to pass away in his coma. Or if you want to be an optimist, like I try to be sometimes, it's kind of like maybe his coma is about to end and he's about to wake up to reality. And and then the last track kind of ends, and it, you know, it can kind of, it kind of starts where it ended, and I didn't want to steal Trainwreck, but I, you know, we overlapped a ton of reoccurring lines from the beginning of the album that I felt like sort of summed up the story. And
it's your paid homage.
Yeah, it was. not a direct ripoff, but I there was from that album, and then the book I read, and just real life experiences. There was a ton of influence. And yeah, I'm stoked. I thought I would never like really get around to doing a full concept, but yeah, I'm really proud with how it turned out. And I appreciate you saying that, man.
And it's funny, you know, you talk about the personal experiences that you've had that you are able to kind of spin into a cohesive story, a cohesive album. It's kind of interesting, and you know, you talk about your friend that was a victim of sexual assault. You talk about your friend in the motorcycle accident, and now you bring up your own personal experience, and you've talked about your mother and her drug addiction. You've talked about it quite extensively. What is that like now? Maybe we should start at the beginning. I mean, like, you grew up in Southern California. You know, I know your mom and dad got divorced when you were at a fairly young age. What was your upbringing like?
My mom was, she obviously had a drug addiction. She was working as a waitress, in the evenings on the weekend. So, my dad started noticing a big issue because she would, you know, she'd have a shift Friday night at 7 or 8 at night, and she's supposed to get off at like 2 or 3. And then, she wouldn't come home until like Monday morning. Like, you know, like she'd be gone for like 3 or 4 days. And, you know, it'd be, you know, him and, me, and then, my two sisters, and he would just kind of be like, "Hey, we have a family. Like, you can't just like disappear for an entire weekend and not tell anybody what you're doing." And
yikes.
Yeah. So yeah, she met a guy that she's been dating for a very long time, I think, while she was a waitress, and I believe he had a pretty big hand in exposing her to a lot of the drugs that she got into. But my dad couldn't really handle it at some point, and they had to get divorced when I was 5 or 6. So I went to live with my mom and her new boyfriend, and then my dad, you know, because it's silly, but because my mom is the female, or, you know, that side in the relationship, they automatically granted her child support. So my dad had to move out on his own, and he was paying, like, I don't know, I think like $400 every 2 weeks in child support. Like, it was pretty rough for him financially. And so, yeah, it's kind of a bummer, because the parent I would want to live with, actually, he just didn't financially have enough money to actually take care of us full time. So I only saw him, you know, I think once a week, and then I would spend every other weekend with him. But, yeah, it was, I mean, I was really young when it was happening, so it was just strange stuff. Like, I'd walk downstairs and my mom would be like laughing hysterically. And I would think, oh, the TV's on, and I'd look and the TV would just be off. And I'm like 7, so I'm really naive, and I'm just like, what's so funny? And she's like just laughing, going like, nothing, and you know, like, things like that seemed like weird, and it, but not a big
deal.
Did
you have brothers and sisters?
I did, yeah. I have 2 older sisters.
And they lived with you too?
They did, yeah. So I mean thank God I had that, because there was, because then I definitely grew up going like, am I crazy, or is this just weird?
How much older are they than you? Did they have an idea more of what was going on?
Yeah, they did. I have a middle sister. She's the one who sent me like Boys Night Out and all that stuff. She's 3 years older.
Sorry.
And then I have another sister who's 10 years older. So
oh wow,
they definitely knew, but it, you know, I think for me at a young age, it was hard to try and start talking about like drugs or the effect that it can have on your mind. Cause my mom, she did some type of a form of methamphetamine, and it basically, you know, the real issue and why it's hard for us to have a relationship currently is cause it did a lot of irreversible damage. And now she's kind of at a point where she's living in a reality that is just so far off from what's real or what's true. She just says really outlandish theories about our family, you know, being involved in child porn, or
what?
Just like her, you know, how her boyfriend knows President Obama, and just like, you know, just the craziest things you could think of that a human being could think. Like, it's all very real to her. So Those things kind of coming through, because then I noticed that when I went into high school, and I think kind of why I grasped onto this type of music that's sad or emotional is because it would make me feel better when I would listen to it. And and as soon as I started kind of becoming more of an adult, her kind of vicious or more crazy side, she kind of started displacing onto me, and she was just randomly start going off that she knows that I'm working with the government to work against her, and just, you know, crazy stuff to hear when you're especially from your mom when you're like a freshman in high school,
right?
And, you know, would just dig through my stuff looking for cameras or wire, you know, whatever she thought was in my room. And it was an interesting upbringing. And then I don't know. Her and her boyfriend said they were splitting up, so they said we had to leave. But I believe it might have just been a staged breakup or something, because we ended up moving in with my dad, and then he was a year, I think, away from not paying child support, so it wasn't a big deal. But then I would pass by their apartment all the time, though, and they never really split up. I think they just didn't want me or my sisters there. So I moved in with my dad, when I was about 17, and it was a much healthier living situation, and that was right when I started learning how to play music. And I was actually very introverted for the few years in high school. I mean, I think when I started writing music. I didn't realize how cathartic it would be, and I being that open about a lot of really hard stuff, I feel like it made me, I don't know, like, I'm like, even now I'm very open to talk about anything, and I'm grateful for, you know, kind of those terrible things happening to hopefully shape me to be more appreciative for certain things that I have that other people might not have, or vice versa. So, I don't regret it happening, but because I think it had a big part of why I'm here and why I'm doing music. And I'm sure you can relate in some regards, because I was big into Silverstein when I was younger too. And that was one of the stories I had, was I'm in my first terrible band.
What were you called?
Oh God, I don't know if I want to announce that publicly. I was in a terrible band called Oh No Please.
Okay.
Yeah, the dumbest. I joined this band. They're like, kind of throwing this name around. I was like, I don't like that at all. And then like a day later, they're like, well, the MySpace is made, so like,
can't go back.
It was fun. I didn't know what I was doing, like screaming wise, and I was doing like this high pitched Alice Santa type, or you know, really old Emery type stuff, and it didn't sound so awesome. But it's funny. I hope he doesn't, I mean, I don't talk to him much anymore. I hope my buddy doesn't kill me. His name's Wes Period. He's a really good hip hop artist, and we kind of grew up in the scene together when we were younger, and me and one of my bandmates, we were really into that song Discovering the Waterfront, and we had like we worked out like this acoustic arrangement that, because I think you guys did a few live acoustic sessions for like some in-store stuff, and I saw it on like YouTube when it was just getting popular, and I was like, oh man, the acoustic one sounds so nice. And then we were like really drunk one night at my buddy Wes's house, and we recorded like a cover of Discovering the Waterfront. And I'm sure it doesn't sound that great, and I haven't listened to it in like a decade, but my buddy Wes told me that he was going through a breakup, and he listened to our cover of it like a year after we did it, and he said it like made him cry because he was like so sad about it. I mean, it's, you know, it's a very sad song. It's a great song. There's a lot of good hits, you know, overall for Silverstein. But
well, thanks.
Anyways,
man.
Yeah, totally running off track there.
No, it's okay though. I love the tangents that happen in this podcast. But yeah, no, I mean, I can't. You know, you say I can relate to you. I can't relate to you at all in terms of my upbringing. I mean, my parents
really?
Are no. My parents. I had a great family structure. My parents are still together. They're fantastic people. I never had any, you know, issues at all in my household. Is about as normal an upbringing as I can have. And a lot of the things that I wrote about and stuff stemmed from, you know, like relationships and a lot of stuff that was happening with people around me that I would kind of like, you know, write from their perspective and stuff. You know what I mean? Because overall, like I'm a pretty upbeat guy, or at least I was, you know, I had a pretty good childhood. So, you know, I hope that doesn't disappoint you. You know, it is kind of like, I think that, you know, emotion and expression can come from a lot of places, you know, and it doesn't always have to be the same. And I think that's, you know, it's funny that you say this, because I was asking Garrett from Simple Planet, I almost said Silent Planet, who you know, it works with you guys as your manager, and he said that your writing style is sort of similar to mine. And I don't know if that's his take, if that's a general consensus, if that's your take. I don't know whose take that is, but it's a take. So, I mean, you know, it's interesting.
He's a smart guy. So I'll take anything he says, pretty seriously, but I don't know. I mean, it could be because, you know, we sort of fall, I think, into a rare category of maybe people who are doing both. Like, I know it's not split duty as far as yelling and singing goes. And,
right.
You know, so I think Yeah, maybe it's because we're trading off between doing both at the same time. But I mean, it is though, like, you know, it could be too, honestly, even that I was like influenced by you when I was growing up. I mean, and that could be why a writing style is similar, because I was listening to you guys when I was, yeah, when I was like 15 or 16. And I feel like those are like some major years for shaping like a person's writing style, like lyrically or vocally. So I could see some similarities. And that actually, that's really funny, because that makes me think of one of the other stories of Silverstein. And I don't know if I'm making this up, that we talked in person about it, and I feel like we did.
Okay.
Or I don't know if I just saw an interview and then I got older and was like, no, I totally talked to him one time when I was younger. When did you play Warped? Like the first time you guys played Warped?
In California?
Yeah. Because I feel like I talked to you at Warped, but I would have been very young.
Well, how old are you now?
I'm 28.
Okay. So we did it in 04 and 05. I think 05 would have been the first year we would have played California.
Okay.
And it was right before Discovering the Waterfront came out. I can remember the show, actually. I think in either Pomona or Ventura.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it was LA that year. I don't know. But I can remember that pretty well.
Dude, yeah. I feel like maybe it was just an interview, but I really feel like I ran into you somewhere, and I was probably 15 or 16, so I was probably just like wetting my pants that I, you know, was talking to you at the time. But I forgot how it came up, but I think we were asking about, I don't know, man. I feel like Discovering the Waterfront was out already, but
maybe it was 06 then, because we came back and we did Warped Tour in 06 again, the whole thing.
Oh, okay.
So it might have been that year.
It might have been, yeah, but I don't know how it came up, but it came into a conversation where, and it's so funny, because, you know, I've watched you guys, and I've listened to, like, your other albums, too, and it's like, you said something along the lines of, like, the screaming thing is fun and all, but realistically, I only see myself doing it for, like, another album or two, and it was, I think Discovering was already out, and that, you know, like this 16-year-old me was like, oh man. And then it was funny, because then as the years have gone on, like, I've listened to each of the albums, and then you're still rocking it with the screaming. And I was like, oh man, he lied. Like, he's still going hard.
I don't think I ever said that I was like gonna stop or I wanted to stop. What I might have meant was, I don't know if I'm going to be able to. Because that's the thing about singing and screaming, and like at the time I started doing it, you know, and you already brought up that you and I, we do both. There wasn't a lot of guys that did both.
Yeah.
There were guys that sang, and they sang all pretty, and then there were guys that screamed, and they screamed all ugly, and there wasn't a lot of overlapping, and there was really no bands that had long careers that had done both. So it was kind of like, I just assumed that the screaming was going to wreck my voice, and I was going to like end up sounding like Tom Araya from Slayer, you know what I mean? And then I wasn't going to be able to sing anymore. And that's just kind of was like the consensus. Well, screaming is going to ruin your voice, and eventually you're going to have to stop doing it if you want to keep singing. That's probably what I meant. And it's funny. I remember I didn't talk to him in person. I read an interview one time with Chester of Linkin Park, and he said the same fucking thing. He was said, like, it was when their first record came out. He's like, I don't know. Can I do this forever? Like, I don't know. I don't know if my voice can hold up what I'm doing to it. And here I am. Jesus, I don't know how many years later, and I'm fine. Like, I can sing. I can sing as well as I ever could. I seemingly don't have any damage to my vocal cords, so I don't know, man.
You still pull it off, really well, man. Because that's still something that I think about all the time. Like, I'm like, oh man, like, and I feel like I've learned. You know, I used to just yell like my head off. I'm sure. I don't know if you feel like your technique like improved as you got older or as you toured more. I definitely. You know, I think especially with touring, because if I even now, if I get too much adrenaline, sometimes I'll go really hard on like the first day or two of a tour, but I'll feel it the next day, and I'm like, I gotta pull it back a bit. And then, it gets a lot easier. But yeah, it's a tricky thing to get around, and especially because I'll have people ask me for advice on how to scream or how to take care of your voice, and I feel bad, but like I don't know how to articulate what I'm doing with. I don't know, with my voice to make it sound like that. Do you feel like that's something that's easy for you to kind of put into words?
No. It's very hard to explain. And I've done a few of those, like whatever it was, Band Happy or TEI, like those lesson things. And I've done some of those like seminars and stuff. And I find that I can help people, but I can help people like on a one-on-one basis. You know, or like in a small group, I can kind of be like, all right, like try this to make your scream sound better, or try breathing like this, or this is not right. But just explaining how I do it is like very difficult. It's like, because I'm the same way as you just said. Like I started out not knowing what the hell I was doing, like just screaming my head off. And then like it was trial and error. And then eventually I kind of like could do it without losing my voice. And then I could do it sounding a little bit better, and then I could change whether I wanted to do a high one or a low one, you know. And then, you know, but it wasn't like ever like a okay, this is like step by step technique how to breathe or how to scream.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Step by step technique how to scream. Breathe in through your nose. Like, don't lift your shoulders. Like, and then you know, like there's no step by step method. It isn't like it's more of an art than a science, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
People may disagree with me. Like Melissa Cross might disagree with me, but I think there's like, I don't know.
I don't think she would actually. Yeah, it's funny. I just had a lesson with her like a month and a half ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's like the sweetest woman on the planet.
Yeah, but yeah.
She was great. She had she basically told me like what I'm doing is like, okay. She basically pointed out like my breathing was shit, I guess, just from a few live videos she watched. Cause she says that I'm inhaling like with my shoulders. So yeah, it's mainly through my chest. And then I kind of push all the air out and then I don't have any left. And she kind of focused on like you need to keep like a big reservoir down in your, like closer to your stomach or your diaphragm so that you, like, you know, you push air out, but you're never actually running on empty or anything. And it was interesting when she pointed it out, because I was on tour while she pointed it out, and she came to watch us, and I was like, oh fuck, I need to like,
wow.
She was like watching me like while we were playing, but no, she was really sweet. She had a lot of good things to say about like Garrett and his style of screaming, and that he's like already figured out how to scream in a way that she's been trying to like teach people for like years and years.
Of course he has.
Yeah. 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 Garrett, it's really funny. Yeah. Garrett used to sound a lot different back in the day, actually. I don't know if you've heard like old, like early Silent Planet, but
I don't know. I don't know if I have actually.
He used to sound like just like the guy from Devil Wears Prada, like the really, the really like high highs and then like the low lows. I mean, he still had his cool yell thing, but he didn't do it quite as often. But seeing his progression has been really cool. And I mean, he's a smart guy. So figuring that stuff out is pretty easy for him, I'm sure.
Well, stylistically, screaming has gone through a lot of eras too. I mean, it's funny you bring up like how, you know, you used to scream in your old band. Oh no, please.
Yeah.
I remember the name. Yeah. And you said, oh, I was trying to do like an Alisana thing or an Emery thing. And it's like, people don't realize, and like you're a bit younger than me too, people don't realize that like back in that era, like back in like, you know, the early 2000s, like 2002, 2003, 2004, doing like a low like scream, like a low guttural metal scream was like lame. Like, that wasn't cool. Like, the high-pitched shit was cool. And that's, like, if you listen to the first Silverstein record, like, it's those vocals, I don't even know what I'm doing. I'm just screaming my head off. But that was the sound, like, everyone was going for. Like, I remember even somebody saying, we were talking about Poison the Well, which is a band I, like, I have always loved and will always love. And someone was talking about, oh, I don't like bands with like low screaming vocals like that. Somebody said that to me. And I go back and I listen to Poison the Well now and I'm like, those aren't even like that low.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And it's like really funny how like stylistically things have changed, you know? And then it got into the super like low metal, you know, vocals and hardcore. And then for a while it was like all yelling. You know, and now it's now there's like bands like Knocked Loose that are doing like, you know, almost bringing a whole new style into it. Like it's all the time. It's evolving. Like what is, you know, the cool way to scream and, you know, and I think that's okay.
Yeah, it's a trip for sure. Hearing, cause sometimes I'll hear someone screaming. I'm like, I don't know if I like it. And then I'll keep listening. I'm like, no, it's kind of cool. Like they're like, they're trying their own thing instead of trying to sound like everybody else. I felt like that with this band, As Cities Burn, when I was a lot younger. And they're, I think his name's TJ, but I remember they had that song, Son, I Loved You, at your darkest. And I remember hearing it the first time and going like, I don't know if I like it. Cause the screaming was, cause he literally, he's just yelling and you can kind of hear the strain in his vocal cords when he's doing it. But that's kind of what was so cool about it. And then the more I listened to it, I was like, oh, I love this band. Like it's really, really interesting stuff. But you're right. It's definitely, especially, even just instrumentally, it's really funny hearing how my old band used to write 10 years ago and then how Dayseeker writes now. It's just like, it's really funny seeing where metal or, you know, post-hardcore is gone in just the past 10 years or so.
Absolutely. Well, one of your bands, your old bands, Arms Like Yours. One of your old, I'll do that again. One of your old bands, Arms Like Yours, kind of still has a cult following in California.
Kinda, yeah. There's definitely, I mean, it's appreciated, definitely. It's funny, though, that we'll get the random comments on YouTube every once in a while going like, Dayseeker sucks, bring back Arms Like Yours. And it's like, It's really funny because, a lot of the core writing for the first few Dayseeker albums was still, myself and our guitarist from Arms Like Yours. So, like, the same, so that, like, if we had even continued the band, it would have been the same material. It's just a different name. But
yeah,
people just, people always have that funny sort of band they want to lock onto. But, I still meet a lot of, I'll even meet people in like the middle of nowhere in the US who are like, Arms Like Yours, man. And it's always really surprising to me because I literally did a like zero extensive touring with that project. So I'm always really, perplexed as to how anybody found out about that project at all, but it's cool, man. You can't forget your roots, you know?
No. And it is good. And also another thing that, you know, you have a lot of different kind of projects you do, but your solo stuff is really, really great.
Thanks,
I really like that song Home on Hold is like an insanely good song. I want everyone to check it out. I'll probably play it at the end of the episode. So people can reference it, but that is a song that, you know, you talked a little bit about relatability, you know, with the concept record Dreaming is Sinking. You talk about relatability, but that song is very relatable to, you know, kind of the everyday person, whatever walk of life they come from.
Yeah. Thank you, man. I didn't, you really look up your guests, I guess, before they
I do my
the
homework.
Show.
Sure, I do my homework.
I appreciate that, man. That's it's a pretty old song, but I love doing like I grew up in that actually. Like when I first started playing, I was into like really into Yellow Card or like Dashboard or you know, just like really, you know, emo or sad sounding stuff. And then I think my sister played like one of the first Under Oath records for me. And I remember I was like, oh, screaming, cool. And then, I started learning how to play guitar when I was like 15, and I didn't really actually have any intentions of trying to sing. And then it just kind of happened as I got more comfortable with playing guitar. But I feel like I have like a very sentimental attachment to that style because I played by myself and just did like coffee shop acoustic shows when I was growing up in high school.
Yeah.
And yeah, and it's you know, it's always interesting to play that stuff and do stuff that it always seems to be about a girl in those situations. But yeah, I appreciate you liking that one, man.
I really do.
I'm working on I'm doing a side project with Mike, who is our drummer. And it's stuff that's pretty close to that. It's more electric guitar though. Like the same type of style. It's just more clean electric. And then Mike's making a bunch of, electronic beats. I always say it's kind of like, it sounds like, a more emo, like Justin Bieber or like Postal Service or something.
Okay.
Or I don't know if you listen to this guy, Nothing Nowhere.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of, that was kind of cool. I like how he sort of blended like just the saddest shit with like hip hop influences though. And the instrumentation I always thought was really interesting. Right, right. So I'm supposed to be doing, me and Mike are writing a lot right now. So hopefully that'll be out pretty soon, but thanks, dude.
Lots of stuff. Another thing that Dayseeker is known for a little bit is doing a lot of covers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of like, here's my take, okay, on why you guys do mm-hmm. so many covers. The lyrics you write and the music you make, it's so emotionally draining for you that covers are like your escape. So that you can just take a little time off and just like breathe and finally be like, all right, we can do something a little more fun rather than put all this emotional craziness into these albums and these songs. Am I right? Am I psychoanalyzing you too much?
I suppose it could be true.
Although you did cover Adele, like Hello, like that's pretty brutal emotionally song too, but at least you didn't write it.
Yeah, no. Oh, I mean, you know, if you're talking about like "Jealous" by Nick Jonas, that's you know, that's
right,
like
sure.
Obviously it's just a fun pop song. But yeah, it's definitely just it's interesting trying to take someone else's song and you know put your own spin on it. I could agree that I don't see it as being super emotionally draining from the content we write because I feel like I'm just. I do it every night, you know, when we tour and I talk about it pretty openly and it's, mm-hmm. I feel like it helps me feel better if anything, but it is fun to kind of take a step back and do something that's a little more outside of the box, like Nick Jonas. We actually, after we finished up our last tour, it was with, Ice Nine Kills and The Plot and You. And, we actually went back to the studio with the guy who did Dreaming is Sinking, and we did a few mellow versions of songs off of the album, and uh-huh. then we did two covers as well. So I'm excited to put those out. But we did like a really sad, really like emotional one that I think is more typical, and then we did one that's kind of. Entirely out of left, definitely in the realm of like a Nick Jonas cover. So I'm excited to put those out.
Cool.
They're just
so much
stuff.
Know,
yeah. It's also just a way for I feel like people to find out about us who would like literally never listen to us. Like I kind of feel bad, but we dropped our Adele cover and it spread around pretty decently initially. And then I remember we were getting on a plane to go to the UK for our first tour and they dropped our video like right before we got on the plane and it you know it had like 200 views or something before we got on and I was like oh it's pretty okay and then we got off the plane and you know it didn't have service for like 10 hours and then it had like 20,000 and then by the end of the day I think it had like 38 it was just like it was the fastest traction we had seen on one of our videos ever
yeah.
I think it had like 100,000 in just a few days and it was really cool, but anyways, it was funny. We played in Wales in the UK, and you know we were headlining, and it was our first time over there. So a lot of the shows, you know, they actually did a lot better than we anticipated. But there was kind of like this older couple that was hanging out at the show, and I was mm-hmm. like, oh, like one of their kids must be playing in one of the opening bands or something. And then we finished playing and I still saw them there and I was like, oh man, they weren't just like, having a drink. Like they were like watching like pretty closely. And then I ended up talking, cause they must've been in like their late 40s or early 50s, like this this cute little British couple, and they told us that they heard our Adele cover, and that was why they came to watch us. But
Wow.
I felt bad because I feel like we
what's up, motherfuckers?
I feel like we lured them in kind of under some false pretenses.
Right.
So.
But hey, I mean, yeah, it's a good way to get your foot in the door. Like I had the guys from I Prevail on the podcast a while back, and
yeah,
you know,
I
they were very,
dudes.
Very honest about that. They used their Taylor Swift cover to get their foot in the door and get people to hear about their band. And, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, people are like, they said like, hey, people like our music 'cause they like our music. It doesn't matter that they found out about it through, you know, that other way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's I'm okay with it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We did a tour with them a few years ago. I love all the guys in that group, but no, it's amazing that it worked out for them in the way that it did. And yeah, I think I don't know if it's true, but I think I also heard it's because I think Taylor Swift was like boycotting like a lot of the major the whatever, like Spotify or iTunes, you know, all that stuff at the time. So I think it was funny because when that single came out of hers, everybody was searching Blank Space.
Ah.
The song wouldn't come up, but I Prevails would. And so our engineer, yeah, he's like, I think that also had a big part in why it went kind of viral, which was
kind of
genius.
What a perfect storm,
right?
Yeah, I mean, if they even knew, they might not have even thought about that. But that is genius. That is genius.
Yeah.
Wow, man. That's crazy. So before I let you go, I don't take up too much more of your time. But I got a fan question here.
Oh, interesting.
A fan question, yes. This comes from Brendan Potter, and he says, "I found your song, A God Without a Face, while I was losing my faith in Mormonism and becoming an atheist. That song really seems to be a heart-wrenching song. What was Rory going through when he wrote those lyrics?"
That's funny. I've talked to a few people about this because on our first record, we had a song called Hollow Shell, which is basically it's written in a perspective where all the singing lyrics are from a guy who's kind of like struggling with his faith, but he still thinks there is a God. He's just at a really kind of like dark place. And then all the screaming vocals are from like God's perspective, like trying to encourage him to, you know, hold his faith and that, you know, everything will be okay. And, you know, a lot of people grabbed onto that one. But on the album after it, we wrote a song and it had like a similar key and like similar chord structuring. And so I thought it'd be cool to kind of, it could have just been called Hollow Shell, like part two, but I didn't want to ruin people's, like, if they really loved Hollow Shell, I didn't want them to think I was just shitting all over that on the second version. But God Without a Face was kind of, I feel like Hollow Shell was sort of in a, you know, and I day to day I'm not an atheist at all, which is a shame because I think when we put out that song, a lot of people thought I went like full-on atheist on that album. But I struggle with my faith. I think like anybody does. And, you know, on a day-to-day basis, sometimes it's stronger and sometimes it's weaker. But I think Hollow Shell on the first album was kind of on the end of a spectrum of feeling like there is a God. I'm in a really bad place and, you know, but I think it'll be okay. And, you know, trying to encourage people on that end. So God Without a Face, it was just written, I wanted to write from somebody's perspective. You know, on my other side of, you know, my worst day where I just don't know if there is a God. And I kind of wanted to write again. Yeah. Just from somebody who had entirely lost their faith and, you know, hopefully help guide people through similar situations who are dealing with hardships like that. But it is unfortunate. And I do understand it because I think a lot of times it's hard for people to separate, the content of a song versus the person writing it. So, and that is kind of something to be careful about too, is just that, you know, if I write something about not really believing in a God or, you know, not having faith in one, even if it's not from my perspective, a lot of people will assume that it just is because I'm saying it, you know, on an album. But,
right.
It's cool that, yeah, I've had, you know, that you've given me this opportunity to have this platform to speak about it. And I've talked about it in a few other interviews too, because I have met a few other people who are like, I loved you guys, and then I heard that song, and it, like, crushed me, like, you know, like, I can't believe you're an atheist, and you don't believe in God, and, you know, it's
I don't know, I'm an atheist, and I don't believe in God, I mean, that's sorry, like, what do you want me to say, you want me to lie, that's funny, though, you know, you put out, it's amazing, like, we were lumped in with a lot of Christian bands when we started, too, mm-hmm. We toured with, like, our first tour was with Narcissist. I don't know if you remember that band. They were on Tooth and Nail, and this band House of Heroes, which is actually an awesome band, mm-hmm. Both from Ohio, and that was our first tour we did, and then we toured with Dead Poetic, and we toured with, I'm forgetting all the names, all Christian bands, so everyone thought we were a Christian band,
yeah,
and mm-hmm. we aren't. And the amount of emails I got about Jesus and about these lyrics being about Jesus and like, you know, that, do you remember that website, songmeetings.net?
It's a great
website, and it has, like, you know, people write what they think the songs are about, and there's discussions. The amount of songs that they think Silverstein songs are about God and faith and stuff, it's like, they're not. None of them. none of them are. So like, you know, I don't know what to tell people, but, like, you know, you got to be honest about, I mean, you're an honest person in everything mm-hmm. else. So, I mean, why wouldn't you be honest about what you believe in? You know, I think it's fine.
No, yeah, it's each their own, and I don't, you know, I have friends like Garrett who are, you know, hardcore into their Christianity, and I have friends who just don't believe in anything, and that's totally okay. And, like, I'm still good friends with a lot of people, regardless of our separate beliefs, but, yeah, it's just funny, I mean, and I get it, too, you know, they might just be younger kids who are more impressionable, and they, you know, I'm sure I was like that at some point where I would take maybe something personally, maybe not on a religious aspect, because I didn't care that much about it when I was growing up in the music scene, you know, I didn't mm-hmm. care if it Under Oath was a Christian band or Devil Wears, it's a Christian band. It didn't make a difference to me as long
Seems
as
Seems like all your favorite them. Bands were Christian bands though, too. As Cities Burn is a Christian band too.
Yeah, they were, yeah. No, I mean, I don't know if Yellow Card was considered Christian, but I totally agree, man. And you obviously have to just write about what you want to write about. And it's, you can't really, I don't want to say you can't care what people think, but you can't take, too many opinions to heart. And I think that's been an interesting thing in being a writer. And, you know, having your stuff shared to a mass public where people can shit on it or they can praise it. And, you know, thankfully, it's like 95, you know, good, and then 5% bad. God for that, because I've seen other bands where it's like the flip side, where it's just mainly negative response, and then there's a small amount of supporters who are sticking with them. But I hope that clarified that for that guy. And
I mean, it's just nice of you to mention it for him.
So
cool, man. Course, well, man. I only have one more question. Thank you mm-hmm. again for doing this, and you know, your music is so great. I hope so many people check it out now, especially the new record. But you have one of the coolest or most interesting side jobs I've ever heard of for a touring band guy. You know, most guys work in bars or load trucks or whatever, but you work in the optometry field.
I do, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So tell me about that. That's definitely very unique.
Yeah, I don't know. I just I got out of high school when I was 18, and I needed a job, and my sister was working for do you guys have Lens Crafters over there?
Yes, or? We do.
Oh, how funny.
We kind of have everything that you have, pretty much.
Yeah, I know. I sound like a dick.
There's some stuff we don't have. I mean, we didn't have Chipotle until a few years ago, actually.
Wow, but, really?
Yeah.
That's crazy. One of my older sisters worked at Lens Crafters, and she's like, I can get you an interview at, you know, this office. And I was like, no, I was prideful and I was an idiot. And I was like, I wanted to go work at Guitar Center because I was a musician. And then, you know, no disrespect to Guitar Center, but I have had quite a few friends who work there who say they actually really don't like it. But,
I can't stand being in that place. Like, every time I'm in Guitar Center, I just want to leave. I don't know what really? It is. I know. Like, when I was a kid, I used to love guitar stores. Now I go in, I'm like, just get your drumsticks or picks or whatever, and let's get the fuck out of here. I
oh my God.
I don't know,
that's
man.
So it's so funny.
I don't know why, but anyways, go on.
Um, Yeah, I tried, you know, I tried working there. I tried, you know, a bunch of other jobs, and I didn't have a ton of working experience at the time. So, yeah, after a few months, I was like, yeah, you better get me that interview, actually. And then, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of been a crazy ride. I worked for them. They're a lot more corporate. I didn't have such an awesome time working for that company. But then I just went into, like, private offices. It's definitely more of like a family or sort of home environment. Like, people will go to the same office because they like the doctor, or they feel like it's somewhere they want to go for like years and years and years. So, sure. It's an interesting field. Yeah. I worked in the lab for a while where you actually make like the lenses and stuff to be put into glasses. So it's a cool field, and I do like the work. The issue is trying to balance that with, you know, like a touring schedule every 2 or 3 months is like,
yep.
It's, I've definitely hopped to a few different jobs, and I always try and lay it on kind of, I guess, like good expectations in the beginning. I'm like, yeah, I got a tour like every once in a while, but you know, I'll give you a heads up. And then, you know, like 3 or 4 tours later, they're like, damn, dude, like how often are you going to keep leaving? Cause I think they're like, oh, he's going to tour like once a year or like maybe, right, less than that. But I mean, music is definitely, it's definitely what I'm passionate about. And it, you know, it does get better every time we go out. Like we make a little bit more money. I feel like I see more kids, like, you know, who know our stuff, and our crowds get a little bit better. So it's kind of a waiting game between, I mean, forgive me for prying. I mean, do you work other than Silverstein and the podcast, or?
No, I don't. I haven't had like a real job in 15 years.
Damn, that's amazing, man.
Yeah.
Good for you, dude.
I feel very lucky that I was able to, you know, I've been able to do it. The band's been able to be successful for so long. Absolutely. But, you know, this is what we're doing here, man. We're going to get everybody to listen to your record, and then you can quit your job or just do it when you want. And, yeah, because you guys are an amazing band, and there's no reason why you shouldn't be, you know, headlining all over the world all the time.
Thank you, man. Yeah, well, I appreciate all the nice things you said, and you know, we'll see what the future holds. We have some cool stuff planned for 2018. So I'm hoping it'll be a good year for us.
I'm excited, man. Well, hey, thank you so much for taking the time, and enjoy your Wednesday afternoon.
Dude, thank you, man. Really appreciate it.
All right, Rory. All the best, man.
So there it is with Rory. Expect some big things. I know they got some cool things coming up, some cool plans. So check them out. Listen to their music. Listen to their covers. I really just love the emotion that Rory puts into all of the music. Before I let you go, I want to remind you to be subscribed to this podcast. I know you're listening to this on some platform. Maybe it's the Apple Podcast app. Maybe it's on your Android phone. Maybe it's on SoundCloud. Whatever it is, hit the little subscribe button right now. That helps me out. Also, if you like the show, please go on iTunes and write a review, preferably 5 stars. All this stuff helps keeping this thing going and keeping this thing growing. Thanks so much. I'm going to leave you with a tune. And this one features my good friend, well, our good friend, Garrett Russell of Silent Planet. Here is Dayseeker with Sleep in the Sea Part 2. I'm Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. We'll see you next week. When I return, the water began to rise. It suffocates and buries you with the tide. Bound to the anchor. Still sinking deeper. I fell with you. Slowly watching us die. Keeping you safe. The load of my now I sink to his cold dark cemetery.